and welcome to North Coast Church. Today, Pastor Mike Hodson is bringing the teaching to you. So open up your Bibles and listen in.
Howdy. Man, everybody in Fallbrook just perked up. Hey, he's one of us. Hey, how's it going? Good to see you. How you been? Good, good. Some of you thinking, who are you? I'm Mike. I'm one of the high school pastors. Thanks for hanging out. Yay, high school. High school, not me. No, high school. Man, I'm so excited to be able to hang out with you guys. I love this time of year. Holidays are great. Hopefully you had a great Christmas with family and friends and cheer and all that fun stuff and celebrated the birth of Jesus well and just really celebrated. I love this time, though, kind of getting into the whole new year because the new year is always kind of that transition point, you know, where you're kind of closing the book on last year. For some of us, 2012 was a great year, had new milestones, maybe graduations, retirements, new relationships, just great things happened. And for some of us looking back on 2012, it wasn't such a great year. Maybe we have lost someone we loved. Maybe we just ended up a spot we didn't think we were going to be. Maybe work wasn't so great. But the great thing is now, in just the next couple of days, we get to start anew. And with a new year comes this new hope and new excitement and new plans. I'm not a list maker and I don't really make goals. I just love to kind of end up somewhere and say, hey, I made it. Great. This is where I'm at. But I know some of you love to kind of do the whole resolution thing where you're probably already thinking through, okay, I'm going to do this year financially, physically, spiritually, emotionally, whatever these things are going to be. Or for some, you're just like, hey, I just have one goal and this is what it's going to be. But for all of us, we kind of take this time and kind of close an old, look to a new and say, great, where are we going? Wherever you're at, if you're a list maker or just make it up as you go, before we really start to make these decisions, I'd love to give you one word today. One word that hopefully kind of gives you a little bit of pause to think about where you're going with this next year. It's one small word. I've only found it once in the Bible. It may be there, it's more times, but it really spoke to me through one story. And so we're going to look at one word, and hopefully with that word, it give you a little bit of room and say, okay, God, what are you doing here? So this is what we're going to do. We're going to open up our Bibles. We're going to jump in to 1 Samuel chapter 14. And we are going to find a word, perhaps. It's a word. It's what we're going to find. As you're flipping pages, if you're looking for like, hey, where's 1 Samuel at? It's at the front of the book. It's right before 2 Samuel. It's great how that works. So if you're not sure where that is, you can look it up on your phone or the table of contents or just lean over to somebody next to you. Maybe this is your time you make your move. You're like, hey there, let's share our Bible. Okay, maybe not. I work with high school kids. I see this stuff all the time. As you're flipping pages, let me kind of set this up, because when we jump in with verse 1, it's just going to go from there. So we really need to kind of get some understanding on what happened in the first couple chapters before this. Okay, at the time, we are meeting God's people, Israel. And for the beginning of time, God has led his people. He's thinking, hey, these are my guys, these are my girls, these are my kids, I'm going to lead these folks. And he always spoke through different people, through judges and through prophets. And so God would speak to this man or woman, and then they would go speak to the people and say, hey, this is what God is telling us, so we need to kind of move this way. And so for the longest time, that's how God ran his people. But as the people kind of got a little lost, let's say, and they're hanging out with a whole bunch of people around them and looking at the different nations and looking at the different people, they say, hey, we want a king. They have a king. They have a king. They have a king. We want a king. How come we don't have a king? At the time, there's a guy named Samuel. He's the prophet. He's the mouthpiece for God. And he says, no, you don't want a king. You want to be led by God. Because if we bring a king's just a man, and that guy is going to blow it, and he's going to take things from you. He's going to use your women and children for battle. He's just going to do all sorts of bad stuff. Do not demand a king. And they say, okay, thanks for the warning. We want a king like them. And so they're like, okay, well, you know, we tried to talk you out of it, and even with the warning, even with all the bad things that are coming your way, Samuel says, okay, we'll find a king. So Samuel goes back, and he talks to God, and God says, okay, well, here's my guy. Picks a guy named Saul. Saul, man, he's a good-looking guy. It says he's taller than most. He's physically fit. He's one of those guys that has a great reputation for battle. He's one of those guys that you just look at and you hear his reputation, say, oh, I'll follow that guy. The problem is, even Saul on his best day, he's just a guy like the rest of us, and so he's going to blow it. But so Saul gets picked, and he's going to be the new king. And so with that, Samuel says, well, you don't need me. I was the old leader. I was the mouthpiece of God. So I'm going to step down. Saul, it's your show. Let's go. So what Saul does to try to make a name for himself, he says, great, I'm going to, you know, go to battle. I'm a soldier. That's what I know how to do. Let's go fight somebody. And so the first thing he does is he gets about 3,000 of his men. They get really excited, and they go out, and they rescue a little village that's been under some distress. But with that, they said, hey, let's not stop there. Let's go fight the Philistines. And so they go pick an outpost and pick a fight with the Philistines. Now, for some of you, you might be saying Philistines, Israelites, whatever. Let me kind of give you a little bit of context of who these people are and why they just don't like each other. They've been fighting, man, for all of history. As long as they were around, they were fighting. Think of, if you're in a historical context, the Hatfield, the McCoys. If you're a football fan, it's the Chargers and the Raiders. If you're a parent, it's a freshman and deodorant. So it's two things that... It's two things that just don't jive. They are mortal enemies. They have fought and fought and fought and fought. And any time they're in the same area, they end up fighting. And so Saul, thinking, hey, I'm a king. I got an army. Let's go fight. And so he goes out and he attacks. And they get a little bit of victory and they get excited and they rejoice. But the problem with that is now the Philistines heard that these other guys threw the first punch. And so the Philistines start to rally all their troops. And they start bringing in chariots. They start bringing in foot soldiers. They start bringing in archers. They start bringing in all the heavy artillery. And so they go from far away to slowly start to close in on Saul's position. And as they advance, they start to take over every little territory and every little town and every little spot. And one of the things they do to kind of get a leg up on the competition is they take captive all the blacksmiths, all the metal workers, because they know that these are the guys who are going to make the weaponry and sharpen things and make points on metal, so they will have stuff to fight with. And so now Israel is losing all of their blacksmiths, they're losing all of their weaponry, and this army, this new king with his 3,000 men, these guys start to get scared. They say, look, we're outnumbered, we don't have enough weapons, we can't fight. And so from those 3,000 men, those guys start to get scared, and they take off, and they start leaving, and they go into hiding because they hear they are up against huge, huge odds. And so then we find Saul, one man with 600 men, because the other, you know, 2,400 took off on him, left him behind. And we find this king that has made a huge decision to start a fight that he cannot win, a fight that he is outnumbered. And not only that, in the middle of this fight, in the middle of just thinking, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? He starts to think, okay, well, what did the old leaders do? What did the prophets do? What did the judges do? Well, okay, I know what I'll do. I'll go consult with God. So he did what Samuel used to do, and he went and he did this offering, and he tried to get God's attention and think, okay, if I sway God, God will give me victory. The problem is, he was a king. Kings aren't allowed to do the things that the priests and the prophets and the judges did. And so he ends up offending God by the way he handles himself. And so with that, now you're one guy you want on your side. God says, I can't help you. You've blown it. And then we find this huge, huge story, huge, huge army. And then we pick up in verse 1 of chapter 14. In the middle of all this excitement, in the middle of all this uncertainty, we meet a guy named Jonathan. Chapter 14, verse 1. One day, Jonathan, son of Saul, said to his young man bearing his armor, come, let's go over to the Philistine outpost on the other side. But he did not tell his father. Saul was staying on the outskirts of Gibba under a pomegranate tree in Migron. With him were about 600 men, among whom was Ahi, who was wearing the ephod. He was the son of Ichabod's brother, Atub, son of Phinehas, son of Eli, the Lord's priest in Shiloh. No one was aware that Jonathan had left. So let's get this straight. You have this big army coming. Everybody's advancing. And what is the military leader, the king, doing? There's a shady spot. I'll just go sit underneath this tree and wait. Doesn't sound very great. Doesn't sound like the strategy you want when you're sitting around saying, okay, leader, lead us. But not only that, we got to pick up the fact that he also has his priest with him. So you have the leader of not only your military, but also your king, the
person who's supposed to lead your government, and then you have the religious leader. Everybody's hanging out underneath this tree. They're outmanned. They're outnumbered. They're just thinking, oh, my gosh, how's this going? And so what they decide to do is just sit down and find a shady spot. So with that, you have this guy named Jonathan who finally says, this isn't the way things are supposed to be. I know this isn't what God wants for us. I know there's got to be something different. There's got to be something more. And he doesn't have the authority to command the whole army. He's the king's kid. He's a soldier. He knows how to fight. He knows a little bit about planning. He knows a little bit about the stuff. But with that, he just says, hey, I can't do much, but I'm going to do my part. So he turns to the guy, his armor bearer, who's just the guy who carries all the heavy lifting and, you know, just kind of assists him with stuff, and says, hey, let's go pick a fight. And so with that, the king, the government, everybody's sitting in one spot. I love the fact that Jonathan saw a need, and he didn't look around and say, man, somebody's got to do something about this. You ever seen something in your own life and said, man, somebody's got to do that? The thing is, most of the time, you're that somebody. You just don't realize it. Oh, man, I can't tell you how many great ideas people have shared with me and told me, hey, Mike, this is what you should do. Hey, Mike, I think this has your name on it. Hey, Mike, you should go do that. And the whole time I'm thinking, I've never heard of those things. If you have something on your heart, maybe you should go take care of it. Then instantly people are like, oh, not me, it's for you. Jonathan, on the other hand, doesn't look for his king, doesn't look for his dad, doesn't look for the religious leaders, doesn't look for anybody else, says, I can do something here. Let's go check this out. Verse 4. On each side of the path that Jonathan intended to cross to reach the Philistine outpost was a cliff. One was called Bozez, the other Senna. One cliff stood to the north toward Michmash, and the other toward the south toward Geba. So again, this guy, he's military trained. He knows a little bit about strategy. So he walks up to a point and he goes, it's just me. It's just my armor bearer. Where are we going to start a fight? Okay, well, here's a very clear valley. At one side, you have a huge cliff. On the other side, you have a huge cliff. He knows that no one's circling around behind him. He knows that there's only one way in, one way out. So he says, okay, this is where we're going to go. And he's looking around and says, okay, I think I could defend this territory. Picks a plan. I love the fact that he just doesn't charge up a hill and say, ah, let's fight. He actually starts thinking about it, saying, okay, I have a desire. I have a passion to do something. This looks like something that will work. But he just doesn't stop there. He doesn't just look at this and say, okay, great, this is what we're going to do. See how he responds. Verse 6. Jonathan said to his young armor bearer, come, let's go over to the outpost of those uncircumcised fellows. Perhaps the Lord will act on our behalf. Nothing can hinder the Lord from saving, whether by many or by few. Now I want you to circle this word. Our magical word we're going to be talking about today is perhaps. Circle it, underline, put stars around it, whatever you like to do. If it's on your phone, double tap it. Here's the deal. Perhaps is probably one of the scariest and most exciting words that I could find in the whole Bible. I love the fact that he uses it here because he says, look, I have a desire, I have a dream, I have a plan, I think this is going to work out. Perhaps God will show up and do this. He knows it's not about him. He says, look, God can do whatever he wants. You know, he could save whether by few or by many. God can do great things. Perhaps God will work on our account. Perhaps is that feeling we all get every now and then where we know what we need to do. We know the decisions we've made. We know the conversations we need to have, but we're not sure exactly how it's going to turn out. Perhaps is that feeling we get when we trust God. We know this is the right thing to do. We know we should. But is it going to go our way? Biblically, a couple feelings of perhaps. There's a group of guys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They get kidnapped by a bad king, and the king says, look, you will worship me. And they say, no, we follow God. And he says, okay, well, if you don't worship me, if you do not fall down and worship this big idol I made that looked like me, we're going to put you to death. We're going to throw you in a big old fire. And they say, well, okay, we know that our God can save us. But even if he doesn't, we're still going to worship God. They knew that God could come through, but perhaps God doesn't show up, we're still going to do the right thing. Jesus was out teaching and healing people, and a father brings his son to Jesus, and he says, Jesus, will you heal, will you heal, will you heal? Can you do this? And Jesus turns to him and says, well, do you believe? And he says, yes, I believe, but help me with my unbelief. There's always that moment of perhaps, no matter how much confidence you have, no matter how much excitement, how much passion you have, you know what you're supposed to do is right, and still there's that little bit of twinge of, perhaps God will work. Perhaps he won't. Perhaps we'll end up just laying in the dirt saying, wow, that was a bad plan. That's why we don't make it our plan. That's why we just don't charge them out and say, ah, we're going to get victory. But we take it before God and say, God, are you in this? Let's see how this turns out.
The armor bearer responds. Do all you have in mind, his armor bearer said. Go ahead, I am with you, heart and soul.
It's just a quick verse, but it says something about Jonathan's character, right? Here's a guy that says, look, we're going to stand in a cliff, and we're going to charge up a hill. We're not sure how many guys are there, but we're going to go fight. You want to go with me? And he says, look, I am with you, heart and soul. It's not a guy that says, well, you're my boss, I have to go, or, man, this is a really bad idea, but you're the king's kid, so okay, let's go. But it shows you how this guy lives his life, his sort of relationships, the way he interacts with people, the way he serves as God, the way he follows. That this guy, this young armor bearer, is looking at him saying, okay, I'm going to follow. You're going to take the lead. We're going to go up this hill together. And with that, I'm with you. Not just because I have to, but heart and soul, I'm committed. It makes me wonder if we're living lives that sold out for God, that people are looking at us going, I'm going to follow you because of the way you follow your God. We're going to kind of come back to this concept in a bit, but let's keep reading and see what happens. Jonathan said, come, we will cross over towards the men and let them see us. If they say to us, wait there until we come to you, we will stay where we are at and not go up to them. But if they say, come up to us, we will climb up because we will, because that will be our sign that the Lord has given them into our hands. He stands out and says, okay, look, I have this idea. I have this plan. Military training tells me this. I got a sharp sword. I got a desire to fight. Let's go. But I don't want to do this if God is not in this. And so it's not that he tests God, but he kind of checks in with God. He says, look, I have a desire. I want to do this. But perhaps God isn't in this. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, okay, look, let's stand out here and, you know, kind of say, hey, here we are. And if they say, stay there, we're going to come get you. We know that this isn't God's plan. And then we have time to kind of take off and run away. But if they say, come on up and let's fight, we know that that is what God has intended for us. It's kind of a crazy plan. You stand out with nothing else except you and faith in God and exposed and say, all right, what are we doing? But that's kind of where Jonathan was. He was a humble guy willing to submit his plans to a God that he believed in more than his own plans. I mean, if you think about the plan, hey, we're going to climb a cliff, go upstairs and fight somebody. Well, that's not a really good plan. That's kind of scary. But he says, but if God's in it, we are going to do this. Verse 11. So both of them showed themselves to the Philistine outpost. Look, said the Philistines, the Hebrews are crawling out of their holes they were hiding in. The men of the outpost shouted to Jonathan and the armor bearer, come up to us and we will teach you a lesson. So Jonathan said to the armor bearer, climb up after me. The Lord has given them into the hand of Israel. And I cannot imagine the fear and the excitement and the anticipation in that moment. You have a plan. You think, okay, this is going to work out. And he says, all right, God showed us. Let's go. So there's that moment. You're like, is this going to work? I got the green light and I'm going to go. I know now I have this confirmation that God is calling me to do something. And so they charge up. And I love the fact that they say, verse 13, Jonathan climbed up using his hands and feet with his armor bearer right behind him. The Philistines fell before Jonathan, and the armor bearer followed and killed behind him. In that first attack, Jonathan and his armor bearer killed some 20 men in an area about half an acre. So get this. This was the plan. We're going to stand out here and say, we got no other plan except God's on our side. And he says, okay, let's go. We're going to charge the hill. And with that, they actually climb up hand and foot. And the way they're climbing up, they are fighting the whole way they get there. Talk about a rough plan. See, just because you know God is in something doesn't mean it's going to be super easy and super sweet and like, hey, I have this plan that God's going to make me rich and famous. Oh, it didn't happen. No, sometimes God's plan is going to develop you to do stronger and harder things. And so with that, they say, okay, great, we're still going to go and we're going to attack. Now with this, we're just going to stop right here and talk a little bit more about Jonathan. But just so you know what happens when you have that perhaps moment with God. From this moment on, what happens is Jonathan and the armor bearer go and they attack and they fight with everything they got. From there, the Philistines are so taken aback and just taken off guard, they actually come out and they start fighting, but they start fighting each other. With that, God takes that moment and starts to shake the ground and starts to really cause this uproar. The Philistines are fighting Philistines. With that, King Saul and all the other military guys that are hanging out say, hey, let's rush in and take this. And so with 600 men, they come in and support Jonathan and the armor bearer. And with that, God gives Israel a mighty, huge victory. And with that, it changes the course of battle. With that, it changes the course of a war. With that, it changes the course of a life in Jonathan. And it all starts with a simple perhaps. Perhaps God will show up. Now, I know it's kind of a crazy story, and most of us aren't going to be climbing hills to go fight Philistines. But the reason why I want to start here before we jump into a new year is because I think some of us can learn a lot from Jonathan. See, I know some of us, when it comes to life and it comes to the future and it comes to kind of following God, we're doing the whole like King Saul thing. We've just found a shady, comfortable spot, and we're just sitting down. We're thinking, we'll see what comes our way. And with that, we are missing opportunities to do amazing things with God. But I also think there are another group of us that are just so locked onto our plans. We are just charging into battle. We're charging up the hill, and we're saying, go, 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 go. And man, how many times have that worked? Great, a few times. But how many times has that blown up in our face? And we got the scars to tell you, maybe that isn't the greatest plan. And so I think that we learn from Jonathan this willingness to perhaps, to have this moment where we look at God and say, okay, God, what do you have for me? Before we write down all the resolutions, before we print it out and put it on the wall, before we, you know, Facebook it so it's out for the whole world to see, this is what we're going to do next year. Maybe we take a moment and we say, okay, God, in the middle of all my plans, in the middle of all my dreams and desires, I want to lay this out in front of you and say, God, perhaps you have something for me here. Perhaps you will move on my account. Perhaps you'll show me something completely different. God, I just want to submit this all to you and say, okay, God, what do you got for me? Because there are so many things in our life that we can make these different decisions on that I guarantee you, your name is not on everything. And Jonathan knew that his name was on this battle, on this fight at this time, because who he was and how God used him. There were other guys that had the desire to fight, you know, of all the other guys that ran away, they went to hide. But the 600 men that stood behind, they didn't have their name called. They sat still waiting for something to happen. See, there's a whole lot to go into this story where you got desire, but only two men who took the action said, okay, let's go. So how do we know when something is ours? How do we know our name is on something? How do we know that we are being called to take this next step of faith, to stand out and say, perhaps God, okay, my name's on it, let's go. I got two things to kind of help us figure out if we are called to respond to this next thing. How to be more like Jonathan and less like Saul. First, fill in the blank. It says, open your eyes. The need will be right in front of you. Open your eyes. Most of the time in our lives, God is working before we even realize it. There are so many things that he is doing, that he is developing, that he is putting on us, that he is bringing out of us in our situations. And we don't even realize it because we're so caught up, we're so busy, we're so many doing so many other things that sometimes we just need to stop and look around. Just open our eyes and focus on what's in front of us. Not all the ifs, ands, or buts, or what ifs, or the past, or, you know, we need to stop and look at the right now. I mean, with family, with friends, with finances, with work, with relationships, with entertainment, with sexuality, with so many different things out there. I mean, if you stop and just think about it, like, what's in front of you right now? If you open your eyes, boom, what's in front of you? Don't tell me this guy's big head. No, not right in front of you right now. What's in front of you in life? What's going on at home right now? What's going on with your kids? What's going on with your spouse? What's going on with your relationship? What's going on with your finances and work and job and so many different things? See, the reason why Jonathan knew that, hey, I'm going to charge the hill here is because his name was on it. He was a soldier. He had battle plans. He had battle gear. He knew what he was doing. For us, there are things in our lives that already have our name on it. We just don't even realize that this is what God has put in front of us. God has something for you to accomplish. We just need to stop and look at it. For me, I can tell you real simple. One of the things that I have my name on are just relationships in life. You could say, yeah, that's great. You're a youth pastor. I hope you like people. Yeah, I have a desire to love on people. But it didn't start when I got a job. It started way before that. My parents would always get mad at me growing up because I was the kid in the house that brought home strays. I'm talking stray anything. I remember bringing home cats. Like, hey, Mom, can we keep the cats? I'm allergic to cats, so I'm like snotty and runny, like, it needs a home. I'm like, okay, well, you're going to die if it's this home. They'd kick them out. I would, if there was a dog loose in the neighborhood, I would trick it and kind of give it food till it came to our house. It's homeless. It needs a home. Will you take it? No, return it to the neighbor. Yuck. I mean, I brought home everything from lizard, snake, frogs, anything that I could catch, collect, or bring home when I was young, and I brought it home. Now, thinking, okay, great, but walk with me a couple more years. The older I got, the strays that I brought home were a little bit more human. And by the time I got to junior high and to high school, it was one of those things that if there was ever a problem going on with one of my friends' house, some people that I use that term very loosely, it was just people I kind of knew or heard about, that if there was a fight with Mom and Dad, that if something was going down at home, if they got kicked out, if they got in trouble, if they felt like they had nowhere else to go, the Hodson couch is always open. I'd have guys for a night or two. I'd have people come hang out. The longer that kind of went on, I actually ended up twice in my life living with my parents. I had two different guys live with us for over a year. It was one of those things where, hey, Mom, Dad, they're just going to come stay for a day or two. 365 days later, it's just one or two more days. Just relax. Just relax. It's one of those things that I've always had this passion and desire. Even before becoming a Christian, when I knew somebody was down and out and had nowhere else to go, I just had this desire to say, look, at least I care about you. I can't give you much, but I'll give you a place to stay. So with that, after God got a hold of my heart, one of the biggest things he put in front of me were youth. Now, I don't have a home big enough to have every student who needs something to come over and spend the night. That'd be a whole lot of bunk beds, and I don't think my wife would be excited about that. But she knows that since this is my passion and this is my call, my cell phone never gets turned off. I've gotten phone calls anywhere from 10:30 about, I just got a text, a kid walked into a glass window and shattered the window. He's fine, but he just wanted to tell me because he thought it was awesome. High school. But I've gotten those serious conversations, you know, at 2, 3, 4 in the morning. Hey, my parents are in the hospital. Hey, my parents are fighting. I can't tell you how many cups of coffee I've shared just covered in tears, just crying back and forth. I can't tell you how many family functions where we had plans we were going to go do something and it had an extra face or two. Day night has consisted of more than just me and my wife on occasion. Now, it's not the fact that I've said, sorry, babe, that's it. But my wife says, look, that's your call. That's your passion. I know you love me first, but go love your kids as well. Holidays, we always have more than just us in the holiday pictures. It's one of those things that if there's ever a need, I know that my call, that my passion is for somebody to say, hey, look, I need a spot, or hey, I need something. And I want to be the one guy that says, look, when you seem like nobody else cares, I care. Let me share you my Jesus and tell you about my God. This is the reason why I do this. Now, maybe you guys aren't passionate about high school kids like that. Maybe you're not passionate about people like that. I don't know. But there's this thing where God says, look, this is what I have for you. And if you stop and if you look, just look around. Where does your heart go to? What just aches when you see other people's needs? What is it? What's going on in your life right now that if you really stop, open your eyes, say, okay, God, where am I at? God will reveal that to you. And he simply says, look, here's your passion, here's your talent, here's your abilities, here's the people I've put in front of you. Go. Do it. That's what I want for you. Just open your eyes. Look around and the need will be there. Because he's wired you, he's given you gifts, talents, abilities, and that's what he has for you. Now the thing about that, some of your talents, abilities, and passions probably aren't going to be the thing that God says, hey, go and do this. And let me kind of explain. I am passionate about high school students. But my second passion that I have that at times it kind of rivals and equals is I love football. I love football. I mean, it could be peewee football. It can be powder puff football. It could be flag football. I love watching football. And with that, I've always desired to find the verse in the Bible that it says, you shall quit your job at the end of November and just watch every bowl game and every playoff game until February. I've been looking for the 11th commandment that says, your wife shall not interrupt the game unless it's halftime. And that's only if there's no highlights on. But it's not there. See, it's not going to happen. I know it's silly. I know it's kind of just, really? You really said that in public? Yes, I already know I'm in trouble when I get home. It's all right. Here's the deal. Here's why I share that. Just because you're passionate about something, just because you have a desire for something, doesn't always mean it's the right thing. Doesn't always mean it's the thing that God wants for you. The second thing that we need to do is get closer to God, because the more we know God, the more we know His heart. The more we know God, the more we know His heart. See, Jonathan and Saul both wanted victory, right? But the way Saul went about it is doing things that God says, no, 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 you're not supposed to do that. And yet he did it anyway, because he says, look, I'm in charge, I'm going to do this. And he says, no, no, that is not in line with God's heart. Jonathan, on the other hand, says, okay, I know that this land that we are fighting for belongs to the Israelites because God gave it to us, not to the Philistines. I know we are outnumbered. But I also know that time and time again, God has given us victory through His might, not through our might. So he looks at it and says, okay, what am I going to do? He knows who God is. He knows His heart. And see, the closer we get to God, the more we understand His heart, the more those passions and desires are going to align with Him. Now, I can't tell you how many times I thought Christians are just crazy. Before becoming a Christian, I would hear about how people would give their money to a church. God doesn't need your money. I would hear about how you would give your time and energy to serve others and all sorts of things like that. And you're like, really? That's ridiculous. But once I became a Christian and started to understand who God is and understand what He's called us to do and how much He loves us, and He says, look, if you love me, I want you to do one thing. Go love everybody else. Love me with all you got, and then love everybody else with all you got. And once you start to understand that, you see God's heart. With that, He can start to show you, this is what I got for you. Flip over to the back of the book. We're looking for a book called James. James gives us just this one or two verses that are so powerful, that are so clear, that say, okay, that's what we're doing. This so speaks to who Jonathan was. James chapter 4. We're going to start in verse 7. If you're ever looking for a quick book to read, it's only a couple chapters, but you're like, I just need some power and some mighty God truth right now. You can open up the book of James, get into it. It's so clear, so precise, it's awesome. The verses we're looking at, it was way, 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 way after Jonathan had done what he'd done. But it shows just Jonathan's character. And this is the sort of thing that Jonathan was all about. And this is the sort of thing that as Christians, as followers of Christ, of people who want to be more and more like Jesus, this is how we should live our lives. James chapter 4, starting in verse 7. We just got a couple. So, submit yourselves then to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. Come near to God, and he will come near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. He says, look, see, a lot of us get so caught up in what we want. We're not submitting ourselves to God. We're submitting ourselves to our desires and our stuff. You know, hey, I want more money. I want better things. I want da-da-da-da-da-da, whatever it is. That's what we kind of put on our list of things to do, of things to accomplish. But when we say, hey, perhaps you got something for me here, God, God says, look, okay, look, if you pull away from those other things, if you put those down in front of me and you just draw near to me, God promises He will draw near to you. Time and time again, it shows all these different times in the Bible where different leaders, different guys who had to make decisions, that had to say, okay, look, I'm going to take some time and spend my time with God. Jesus Himself, before or after every big teaching and miracle, you could look it up, He went and spent time in prayer connecting with God. Where are we submitting ourselves to God, getting away, drawing near to Him so He can draw near to us and saying, okay, God, this is what I got for you, kid. And then we can say, okay, I know your heart, God. I know who you are, so I know my name is on this. We're all called to do something. We all have something in front of us. And the way we know it's ours is if we open our eyes and take a look around and say, okay, this is what you got for me. And then check in with God and say, okay, God, I know your heart. I know who you are. All right, I'm going to follow. So you're called. You got something to do. But now, what do we do? Kind of, how do we kind of jump in and, for lack of a better term, how do we win the battle? If we knew that Jonathan was going to charge the hill, how did he know that God had him, you know, exactly where he wanted him? So next couple fill in the blanks are simply how to win the battle. There are a couple things we have to do to guarantee some victory. Because even with the best of plans, if we don't execute them the right way, we can really end up in a world of dirt. First thing we need to do, start your own skirmish. It's a fun word, skirmish. How many times do you use that today? Go home this week and say, hey, what's that skirmish over there? It's working. It's fun. Start your own skirmish. There's a movie a couple years ago, and I know a whole lot of people have seen it, a movie called Braveheart, one of my favorites. There's this scene where both sides are kind of sitting on a battlefield. And you have one, you know, saying, hey, we're going to take over. And the other one says, we don't want to fight, but we really don't want to give up our rights. We don't want to do this. And so they're sitting there kind of deadlocked. And they're not sure what to do. These guys want to attack. These guys say they want to attack, but they really don't know what to do. So it's just kind of at this pause. And then here comes William Wallace with his band of men. And he says, hey, look, guys, if we don't stand up for ourselves, we're going to regret what we did. And so with that, he starts to charge the field. And right before he takes off, his best friend turns to him. A guy named Hamish says, William, where are you going? He says, I'm going to go pick a fight. See, William knew what these guys wanted, but William also knew these guys were too nervous to take that step and go to do it. See, sometimes we need to just jump in and say, okay, I've made the decision. I know what's in there, but I need to move away from just wanting to see something to starting to do something. It needs to be that action step. So many times people want to see change, but they're not willing to be the change. In my personal life, I could tell you that a couple years back, I was finishing up school. And man, you know those times in life where you just get so busy? And if you're married or if you have kids or if you have people in your life that you really love and care about, you just get so busy. It's not that you avoid them, but just there's so many things going on that even if you're with them, you still don't really connect with them. I was finishing school. I was working full time. My wife was also working, but on the side, she was doing some wedding coordinating and some party things. With that, we also had growth group and family things and just so many different things going on. We weren't doing bad things and we weren't really in a bad spot. We just weren't in a great spot. And so many things are going and so many different things are pulling for our attention. So many things are calling us in different ways. I found myself looking at her thinking, man, you're more of a roommate than you are, you know, a spouse. You know, we kind of sleep next to each other and wake up, go our separate ways. And I just got to this point where I knew that something wasn't right. Now, again, it wasn't bad. It just wasn't good. But I thought, well, maybe I'll talk about it tomorrow, next day. I don't know if you've ever had one of those things where you're looking for that perfect time to bring something up. That perfect time never comes, right? And so the next day turned into a few more days. And then I thought, well, if she really feels the same way, then she'll bring it up. She never brought it up. So after a few days of just finally thinking, okay, I've got to do this. I remember I walk into the bedroom. She's sitting in bed reading a book. And I say, hey, and the first thing that comes out of my mouth, I can't say I really thought about it. I said, hey, I want to pick a fight. She stops and looks at me, puts her book down. She's like, huh? With me? Yeah, with you. I want to fight. And she kind of looks at me and goes, what are you talking about? And so that started this cool conversation. And over the next couple hours, I mean, we just talked. We reconnected. It became one of those things where, you know, we shared. We talked about, you know, how you feeling. How am I doing as a husband? How are you doing as a wife? And what's going on? And there was a lot of laughter. There was a lot of planning. There was a little bit of crying, mostly on my part. I'm a sensitive guy. But we got back together, and we just got on the same page. See, sometimes we've got to be the people that just say, hey, let's pick a fight. I remember at the end of this conversation, she looks at me the way only your spouse can look at you, and you know they're going to say something so deep and amazing. She says, you fight like a sissy. As I wipe tears from my eyes, it's okay. We've got to step in and do these things. We can't wait for someone else because we know if God has put things in front of us, we know if God has said, okay, your name's on this, you're called to do it. Let's go, let's get it. And sometimes that perfect time never comes, and so we just need to decide, okay, I'm going to go. A couple quick questions I want you to jot down. It's not on your note sheet, but just a few things to kind of get you thinking, okay, well, does this have my name on it? I want to start my own skirmish, but does this really have me written all over it? Just a couple quick ones. Ask yourself, can I make a difference? Can I make a difference? There are some things I get so excited about and so passionate about, but I know it doesn't have my name on it. I know I could just run headlong into a wall multiple times, and it's not going to change anything. One of the things that gets me fired up more than anything are those guys who stand on street corners with bullhorns and yell at people about Jesus. Man, I can't tell you how many times I have stopped to talk to those guys. They're not going to change. I've shared Bible verses with them. We've talked different facts and figures and all that, and it all comes down to no matter what I say, I'm going to go to hell. So that's like, okay, great. Well, you have a good night. I'm just going to go love people and you can offend people. It's your choice. That's not going to change. So if that's one of your situations, look at where you can do the most impact. Where can you make change? Second one, is it aligned with God's will? That goes back to knowing God's heart. If we're not connecting with God, if we're not, you know, really getting close to our God, don't run off half-cocked and just jump off a cliff like, yee-hoo! No. Get in there, figure out, okay, really, I can make a change, I can have impact, and with this God, I know you're in it and I know you're calling me to do this. Third one, am I moving towards the problem? Am I moving towards the problem? See, a lot of us, we just kind of have that part. That's a hesitation. We know God's in it, we know our name's on it, but then actually moving towards the problem. There's a line that I use a lot in high school. I got it from a great book. It's called Do Hard Things, if you're looking for something for high school students to read, and even you, great book, Do Hard Things. But these two authors, they're high school age students, and they write this book, and the big thing they do and talk about in there, one little line. It says, are you known for what you do? See, so many times as Christians, we think about what we don't do. Hey, I don't smoke, I don't steal, I don't cheat on my wife, I don't whatever. You know, you name it, we don't. But are you known for what you do? Are you out serving? Are you out loving? Are you out sharing your faith? Are you living in such a way that people say, man, they are different. Why are you so different? I want to be known as somebody who's known for what I do, not for something I don't do. So if there's an issue and God has put in front of you, are you going to be moving towards it? Are you going to be known for one of those people who go and get closer to God, get closer to this situation? Say, okay, hey. Here's what I got for you. Man, there's plenty of things out there, but it all starts with us being willing to start our own skirmish. Last thing I got for you, last point, last fill in the blank, and this is for those who've been sitting here the whole time and your blood pressure's rising, you're starting to get that like heartbeat in the side of your neck and you're just sweating thinking, I am not Jonathan, don't you dare make me do anything. This one's for you. Lead the way up. Or lying with someone on the way up. We know Jonathan's name, and he comes up a few more times in the Bible. We don't know the name of the armor bearer. There's nothing wrong with that. Because some of us are called to be the out front leader. Some of us have the personality, the dynamic. We love being out front saying, hey, this is who I am. This is what I'm going to do. And some of us are more that armor bearer where we are simply a support. And there is nothing wrong with that. If you think of Jesus' ministry, the whole time he was on earth, he didn't just do it all himself, but he shared that ministry with others. He had his other disciples that were a part of what he was doing. Paul, who wrote a whole lot of the New Testament, he always had other people with him. Started with a guy named Barnabas, and then it moved to Titus, and it moved to Timothy. Young leaders that were looking up to this older leader saying, okay, great. Old Testament, you have Moses, you have Aaron, you have David and Joab. There's always somebody there to be a support. And for some of us, the reason why we don't get off the couch and get going is because we don't feel like we have the support. And man, there is nothing more powerful than somebody looking at you saying, I am with you heart and soul. I believe in you. I know what you're going through. I think you can have victory in this. I could see where God has called you to do that. Man, we need support. For some of us, we're not going to be that person out on the front of the stage. For some of us, we're not going to be the person yelling out loud. We're not going to be the face of something. But we are going to be the person behind the scenes that makes sure things happen, that are so passionate, that are lifting people up in prayer, that are that support system. For some of us, we are on the way up. And for the rest of us, we just need to align with that right person. Again, I love sports, and so last sports analogy is, you know, there are the star quarterbacks that get all the awards and look pretty. But that guy is not going to do anything if it's not for his line that's protecting him. It's the same team. You know who else is on the team that you never really think about? The guy who runs out at halftime and hands out, you know, Gatorade and orange slices. Everybody needs everybody to succeed. Because ultimately this victory isn't about me. It's not about you. It's about God. And so whatever position God has put you in, are you the one out front? Are you a Jonathan? Or are you the armor bearer that says, look, I will love, I will support, I will pray for, I will encourage Jonathan. We all have a spot on the team because God wants victory for all of us in different ways. But that only comes down to if we stop and say, perhaps God is in this. And when we give God the room to work in our lives and say, God, will you do this? That's where God says, okay, here's my plan. Here's where I'm going. Will you follow? This year, hopefully it's a year of many, many perhapses. Let's pray. Lord, we love you and thank you so much that you are dying to be in relationship with us, that you want to walk with us day in and day out. And Lord, I thank you for an example of a guy named Jonathan who knew that this was only through you that I will have victory. May we live lives like Jonathan, that we say, God, this is about you. Are you in this? If so, I will move. If not, I will not. Lord, may we be people who live that way. God, lead us this week. Guide us this week. As we look to the new year, may we look for new opportunities to love and to serve and to chase after you. Thank you so much for what you have given us in 2012, and we are excited about where you are going to bring us in 2013. It's in your name we pray. Amen.
So before we close, if you want more information about this teaching or any other teaching, please go online to www.northcoastchurch.com, or you can see us at 2405 North Santa Fe Avenue in Vista, California. Check the website for times and services. And now, let's get back to some closing thoughts from Pastor Mike Hodson.
As we go, I hope this year is a year of many perhapses. Perhaps God is in this. Perhaps God will move. Because as we look back at our plans, man, I hope they align with God's plans. This year can be huge with changing just one word, perhaps. On your way out, say hi to another Jonathan or an armor bearer. They're both good. God bless you guys. See you next year.